This is Hacker Public Radio, episode 3930, for Friday, the 25th of August, 2023. Today's show is entitled, Playing Civilization 2 Test of Time. It is hosted by Ahukar, and is about 12 minutes long. It carries a clean flag. The summary is, some hints for playing Civilization 2 Test of Time.
Hello, and welcome to Hacker Public Radio and another exciting episode in my series on my history with strategy gaming. And what I want to talk about today is Civilization II Test of Time. Now, I have noted that the various versions of Civ have each had expansions, generally two of them, before a whole new version came out. And that is true for Civilization too. Normally, I don't cover them separately. I prefer at this point to look back at the final version of each after all of the expansions. But Test of Time is the exception. Now, Civ 2 was developed by Brian Reynolds and Jeff Briggs, with some help from Sid Meier, at MicroProse. But shortly after the game was released, all three of them left MicroProse. And if you care, you can read all about it in there's a book Sid Meier's wrote called Sid Meier's Memoir. And I've got a link in the show notes if you want to check that book out. And this involved MicroProse getting bought up by other companies, rights getting tossed around, and such. Meanwhile, the three main people from MicroProse founded a company called Firaxis, F-I-R-A-X-I-S. So, Test of Time did not directly involve Sid Meier, Brian Reynolds, or Jeff Briggs. They'd all gone. Still, when Civilization Chronicles was released, which I'm glad I have, Test of Time was included. So it is still part of the family in some sense. And I have spent many hours playing it, and very happily. The name of this, Test of Time, is a play on the original Civ opening screens, which ask you if you could build a civilization to stand the test of time. Now, there's two things that set Test of Time apart from Civ 2. First, the artwork is different. This is purely a visual thing which may or may not matter to you. Civ 2 had very bright colors, while Test of Time has more subdued colors. And the unit icons are different, and so on. There are some other minor differences, but you might not even notice them. The gameplay is really the same, up to a point. You have four possible game selections, plus a scenario, when you start up Test of Time. The first is the original game, which is just the Civ 2 you are used to, but with the new graphics. But it is the other three options that make this game something different. And all three hinge on a new game mechanic, never used again, to allow multiple maps within one game. Now, you should think of these as layers. Each layer has to have the exact same dimensions, so that when stacked, a tile on one layer matches up with a tile on another layer. And of course, there has to be a way of moving from one layer to another. Now, extended original game. This is one of the new options. And your first clue that something is different is when you see alien names for a few of the civs available. You could even decide to play one of those alien civs, though I don't recommend it. The alien civ is there to provide an added challenge when you get to Alpha Centauri. So, if you actually play as the alien civ, you'll have a very boring game, since you won't have any opponents to play off of. Still, there will be one alien civ in the game. That is the point. And you will see that the alien civ may even build a wonder or two. Now, this alien civ resides at Alpha Centauri, and you will ultimately meet it if you land colonists there. But for most of the game, this doesn't matter, other than occasional news notes of what the alien civ has done. As in the original Civ 2 game, you will build your cities, build your units, research technologies, and so on. You could even go for a conquest victory, but that would make no sense. The whole point of Extended Original is to get to Alpha Centauri. I have played games where I conquered everything but one lonely opposition city so that I could keep going to get to Alpha Centauri. Now this unlocks a whole new tech tree, and now you battle the Centaurians as well as any other opponents still in the game. So at this point, suddenly you have shifted to a conquest victory. Now you can unlock technologies that let you move back and forth between the two planets, but they only work on some tiles. You'll eventually figure out that a land unit moving between the planets cannot move to a forbidden tile on the other one, like a sea tile. So it's got to be land to land or sea to sea. And of course, vice versa. Victory happens when you've wiped out all the opposition. Now, another new option is something they call the science fiction game, which is a scenario. This game starts off with the scenario of an Earth expedition to another star system that ends up in the Lalande 21185 system and crash lands on the second planet, Funestus. Of course, the humans are split into factions that operate as separate civs in this game, much like Alpha Centauri, which was released around the same time by the original team from MicroProse, who had moved on to Firaxis. Now, there is also a non-human race crashed on the same planet. By researching the appropriate technologies, the two races learn to communicate with each other and then to move around the system. The first layer you unlock lets you visit orbiting platforms above the planet, which were built and left there by the original Lalandian inhabitants, then eventually to two other planets in the system. One, Naumachia, is a rocky planet. The other is a gas giant called Nona, which is the original home of the Lalandians. Again, you have the science versus conquest option for winning. Wiping out all opposition in the Lalande system will give you a conquest win. Or you have a couple of ways to get a science victory. Either send a spaceship back to Earth or build a quantum gate back to Earth. Next, we have the Midgard scenario. Now, as a scenario, this is not intended to be something you play over and over, though you can if you like. But it was a good sandbox for developing the fantasy game, which we'll discuss next. Now, in the Midgard scenario, you have a story heavily based on Norse, Slavic, and Celtic mythology. For example, Ragnarok appears in this scenario. Now, you have seven races: elves, merfolk, goblins, humans, infidels, who are also human but a different faction, Butio, which is birds, and Stygians, which are the undead. The story in this scripted scenario revolves around an ancient evil wizard, Volsang, who was locked away many centuries ago and now has been forgotten. But he is growing in strength and has just started marshaling evil forces to attack the world. You play one of the seven races and try to fight back. In this scenario, there are four levels or maps: the surface world, the cloud world, the underground world, and the undersea world. As you can imagine, different worlds are most suited to different races, so your starting location will be determined by the race you choose to play. Now, winning the scenario can happen in four ways. You can build a siege engine that conquers all evil. You can discover Bifrost from the Norse mists, or complete 10 quests, which will also reveal Bifrost, but without all the research. Or you can just wipe out all the competition. That is always available. And a note about the gameplay. You might think from the scenario setup that the races will join together to defeat the forces of evil, but that does not happen. You are in conflict to some degree with all of the others, in addition to battling Volsang's minions. Then, the fantasy game itself. This builds upon the Midgard scenario, but removes the scripted element and the 10 quests. You have the same 7 races, the same 4 layers/maps, but it is now open-ended in terms of gameplay. Every race has its natural starting point. For humans, infidels, which is a second human group, and elves, their natural place is the surface world. Gutios are a bird race, so the clouds is their natural home. Merfolk, of course, thrive in the undersea world, while goblins and Stygians are at home underground. But from the beginning, every race has access to the surface world. As you progress, you learn to access other worlds. And this applies that if you pick the Butios or the Merfolk, you will have a space all to your own for a while. Whereas if you pick humans, infidels, or elves, you can expect a lot of interaction, conflict, from the early stages. Victory conditions are building the siege engine, discovering Bifrost, or wiping out all opposition. So in summary, Test of Time is really just an expansion of the Civ 2 game, not a version in itself. At one time I played it a lot, because the extended original offered even more playing time and some additional challenge, but it's not a big advance. The one thing that set it apart was the multiple maps feature, and while I enjoyed it, it has never been picked up in subsequent versions. I think you can conclude that it is not a gameplay feature that other developers wanted to work with. Now, you can get Test of Time in a variety of ways. I have it in the Civilization Chronicles boxed set, which I don't think is available for purchase in stores anymore, but you might be able to find one on eBay or similar. And then, of course, there's the original CD-ROM version that, again, you might be able to find on eBay or other used places. But also, I put a link in the show notes. You can find it at myabandonware.com. So you got some options. If anything I've said here strikes your fancy and you think you want to check it out, you can get it. And, maybe you can have some fun with it. I certainly spent a lot of hours on this game, and you might enjoy it as well. So, this is Ahuka for Hacker Public Radio signing off, and as always, encouraging you to support free software. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. Today's show was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hosting for HPR has been kindly provided by anhonesthost.com, the Internet Archive, and rsync.net. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License.